Welcome to the Prayer Press Podcast. My name is Mackenzie Bennett, and thanks for listening. Today, my guest is Ken Gagne. Welcome.
Hi, Mackenzie. How are you?
I'm doing well, thanks. Hope you are, too.
Yes, it's a pleasure to be here in Boston. I'm happy to finally be on the show. I've been listening to a while, and it's an honor to talk to you.
Okay, great. So we have a good show today because you have been involved in podcasting for quite some time and have experience in what seems to be a little bit of everything. And we've got a news article to talk about as well. And then at the end of the show, I will have a PowerPress tip courtesy of Sean Thorpe from the Blueberry team as well. So I'm ready to dive into our news. What about you?
Let's do it.
All right. The article that I wanted to talk about real quick today is podcast revenue will jump 85% this year to hit $220 million. That's a lot of dollars.
That's a lot of zeros.
Yes, it is. It very much is. This is kind of just showing the abilities of podcast advertising at this point. I've been talking about advertising and podcasting for as long as I've been on doing this show. But whenever an article comes out like this with that $1 million sticker on it, then it gets people's attention, and it certainly gets some advertisers' attentions as well, because they're able to see, jump in now, and you can get this before, you know, before a lot of other people's. I think that's one of the reasons why it's back in the news right now, and partially because Apple just told everyone that they're going to be releasing statistics, which is also going to probably affect the advertising community for podcasting. There's a lot going on there.
Yeah, there are a lot of changes going on. Podcasting is certainly becoming more popular. More people are monetizing it. But what I'd like to know, which this article does not state, is what percentage of podcasts are earning that aggregate $220 million? How diverse or how spread out is that revenue? Because I haven't seen a dime of it.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, the majority of people that work with Blueberry and use our hosting or any of our services whatsoever, a lot of them are not necessarily the ones getting that $220 million. I feel like a significant portion of it is going to certain shows and small groups of people, and a lot of it is not necessarily being spread out. And if it makes me wonder if the money that they're including in this, how are they coming up with this number? Are they including the situations where someone finds a sponsor in their hometown and says, you know, like, oh, this restaurant will sponsor us? Is that included? Or is it just they went through an advertising agency or something like that?
I don't know. Though, certainly those local opportunities are going to be harder to track as opposed to some larger marketing and analytics firm. Mm-hmm. I imagine that those advertisers who have pre-established advertising programs like Audible, where you can just go and fill out a form and become one of their promoters, that would be pretty easy for a new podcaster to get in on, as opposed to pounding the pavement and knocking on doors and saying, hi, I have a podcast. Will you advertise with me?
Mm-hmm. I feel like they're missing some potential information here.
Still, that certainly doesn't undermine the bottom line, which is $220 million. That's
absolutely not.
Yeah, it's definitely growing. It's definitely an area ripe for opportunity. And with the adpocalypse that's occurring on YouTube, where a lot of content creators are seeing their revenue go down, mm-hmm. people are looking for alternatives. I think for a lot of people, that's probably going to be Patreon, where they can, to a degree, cut out the middleman and solicit their audience directly. But for podcasters, advertising is certainly something they shouldn't ignore.
Absolutely not. And it says in this article that podcast ad revenue has grown by 85% since last year. So just in 1 year, it's grown that much. And then in 2015 to 2016, it jumped 73%. So when I think about this, it's really these percentages are starting from almost nothing. It feels like if they're able to jump to this number via 85%, then there wasn't a whole lot that they were counting before that, even if it is such a big number like this.
Right. For the growth to be that big, they would have had to have, the baseline would have had to have been pretty small to begin with.
Exactly. I have trouble with math, and even I understand that. So it said that in terms of the advertisements that giving out a code to buy something at a discount or to try it out or something like that seems to work best. And I happen to agree in terms of that. That is the kind of advertisement that I want to hear out of, you know, I don't want to just learn about something. I want to actually be able to try it with a discount. If I listen through that entire thing, then I want to get something out of it in that sense. I feel like
a lot of I would agree with that. I mean, I do something similar with my hosting platform. They have an affiliate code I use to get 4 free months off a 1-year plan. And I advertise that on my podcast and on social media.
Exactly. We can talk about all the different types of way to advertise, but that one seems to be a game changer with some people in terms of actually getting results.
Right. I mean, you can do Amazon affiliate marketing, but that doesn't give the customer a better deal than they would get from just going to a non-affiliate link to Amazon.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so if you can give them an incentive to actually click through, that's a win for both of you.
Yeah, that's a lot. That's a much better situation there. So in general, now is if you are looking to get in podcast advertising, I believe now is the time because they are saying that as measurements become more clear and they get more information on who is listening and the demographics of who is listening, then this is going to get even bigger. And obviously that's how it's going to work. So I guess if you're looking to get involved in advertising, do it now.
Do it now. Better earlier than later.
Yeah, definitely. I found this article on Adweek, and you're going to be able to find it in the show notes for this episode as well. That's kind of all that they really have going on with that at the moment. So I think at this point, I would like to get started talking about your show and why we have you on the show today, because you have a lot going on with PowerPress.
Do I? Am I busy? I didn't know.
Exactly.
Yeah, I've been using PowerPress ever since I launched my first podcast, my first co-hosted podcast in 2011. I'd done some podcast editing before that when I was an editor at Computer World Magazine. They're the same company that is that does Macworld and PC World and InfoWorld, and basically any magazine that ends in world is the same company.
Good.
So that's where I got my start. I was the editor and the, I don't know what you would call it, the narrator, the person who does the intro and outro bumpers.
That would work.
Sure. So that was me. Go I was bad. The narrator. And then I used that experience with editing in Audacity to launch my own podcast with a friend of mine out in Colorado.
Mm-hmm.
We co-hosted it. We launched a WordPress website. I'd already been using WordPress for years, and I'd used other CMSs like Drupal, Joomla, TeamSite, Sitecore. And WordPress is by far my favorite CMS. It's the most flexible, the most extensible, and the most affordable. And so I looked at how do I do podcasting on WordPress 6 years ago, and the answer was Blueberry PowerPress. So I installed it, and it worked fantastically. And I've launched about 5 other podcasts since then, not all of which are still being actively hosted. But for each and every single one, I built a new WordPress website, installed PowerPress, and it just worked. And there are probably some things that I may have overlooked in the 6 years because PowerPress is so easy to configure. You just sort of set it and forget it. And I install all the updates. I love that it's still being, you know, regularly supported. Mm-hmm. I get great customer support from Sean and the team in the forums. But there are probably new features that have been added that I don't even know about because I haven't gone back under the hood and taken a look at it.
We see that happening all the time, which is great in so many aspects because people are able to set it and forget it, and then they don't have to worry about it. We'll do these updates and include new features and whatnot that people are going to enjoy. It's just a matter of making sure that people know that PowerPress is capable of these things.
Right. I think some of the new features might be when you're first setting up your podcast, like it's now easier to import from Squarespace or whatever.
Yep.
But there are probably other new features. Like I just noticed a few months ago that PowerPress can set my ID3 tags for me automatically.
It will.
I don't think that feature was in there 6 years ago.
It was not. See, like that's the thing. You know, as podcasting changes, we have to change PowerPress too. It's only... How do we tell people like you that are so comfortable with it at this point to go back in and take another look at it?
Right, because being comfortable can sometimes be a little dangerous because you grow complacent.
This is true as well. Yeah. This is true. So is there any way on all of these shows that you have set PowerPress up, that you have used it differently?
There was one website where I used the per category feeds. Mm-hmm. First I should back up and say that my first podcast ever that I hosted with PowerPress was called Open Apple. Mm-hmm. It is still available on open-apple.net. They have a different co-host now. And it focuses on a very niche audience, that being people who still use the Apple II computer. Do you remember the Apple II?
Is that one of the big ones with the rainbow Apple on the side?
Yes, it does have the rainbow logo. It is that old. So okay. It actually is pretty much the first personal computer and the first product that Apple sold when they were founded back in 1977. It's not a form of Macintosh. Yep. It predates the Mac. And it was super popular in education, in academics. If anybody listening to this grew up in the classroom playing Oregon Trail, it was probably on the Apple II.
Yes, I know exactly what Apple II is now. I needed your reminder, but yes, I remember this.
So there are still people out there who use this machine, not as their primary computer anymore, more as a hobbyist, but it's actually a growing community. And that was the audience for our first podcast. And to date, it has been the most popular podcast I have ever hosted.
Wow.
I think that's maybe because it was such a niche audience. Yep. That
there's nowhere else that these people are going to find this information, that are going to find this content.
Exactly. There were no other podcasts targeting that niche audience. So the more focused we were, the more people who were listened to our show.
Yes.
So that was a ton of fun. We would interview a different Apple II user every month to ask them, what the heck are you doing with this old machine?
Right.
And we count ourselves among those because we use those Apple IIs as well. And then I was also on the planning committee at the time for an annual Apple II convention. That is actually coming up next month. It's still being held.
Still doing it? That's awesome.
Yes, this will actually be, I think it's like the 28th or 29th year of the event. It's my 20th year going. It's called Kansas Fest. And when I was on their planning committee, I hosted a podcast where we would basically take archived media from Kansas Fest's past and put them up as both audio and video formats. And we would have two different podcast feeds you could subscribe to because PowerPress supports both media.
Yes, it does.
Mm-hmm. Other than that, though, most of my podcasts are pretty much the same format as far as PowerPress configuration. Mm-hmm. The two podcasts I'm hosting now, in fact, one of them, at the time of this recording, I just recorded the last episode yesterday.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that podcast is called IndieCider, and mm-hmm. it is where I interview indie game developers, people who are making their own video games without a lot of outside capital or people buying their intellectual property rights.
The bootstrap people.
Exactly. So I think there's a lot of creativity in that space as opposed to the AAA games you see from Nintendo and Sony and the like. Mm-hmm. And the other podcast I host is called Polygamer. It is where I interview marginalized voices in the gaming industry about their experiences, their accomplishments, anything cool that they're working on. And that podcast can be a little bit edgier. So I have PowerPress configured to let me choose on a per episode basis whether or not it needs an explicit tag.
That's a smart choice.
Yeah, it does default to explicit just in case I forget. I want to err on the side of caution. Mm-hmm. Whereas IndieCider is supposed to be clean, so I bleep anything out. Rarely does that ever need to happen, though. Mm-hmm. And so I just have that podcast going up, and it's always clean. It doesn't even give me the option on a per episode because it should be clean.
Yes. That brings up a good point, is that you can set it in general, but then you can also set specific episodes. But a lot of the time when people are choosing per episode of what to label it as, they know their audience already. They have an idea of, if you're going to be explicit, at least sometimes you know that you're taking that risk, because some countries are not into the explicit content, and you're not, if you are labeled as such, you're not going to be in their iTunes directory whatsoever. This is why we give you the option, because it's good to have those episodes and let people know sometimes.
Do you know if there's a penalty for me uploading an explicit episode and marking it as clean?
I don't think there is any type of penalty really in that sense. I assume that it would have to be reported enough for iTunes to even catch it in that sense. And then for them to contact you, they would probably just, I assume when they would contact you, that they would pull the episode or possibly your show down until you fixed it. But in terms of locking you out or anything for an extended period of time, I doubt that would happen.
I mean, I'm certainly in favor of truth in advertising. If it's explicit, mm-hmm. it should be. But your comment about it limiting my audience, perhaps by country or region, mm-hmm. obviously there's some concern there.
Yes. Yes. I feel like a lot of the time it's not necessarily going to impact you that much. But it also is depending on, you know, you need to look at where your audience is. Look at your statistics. Look at where most of the people are downloading from. Because it'll tell you the country. It'll tell you the state. And if you know that that might potentially be a problem with wherever those people are, then consider changing that. Or if you're seeing that this is a little more in-depth than getting in tune with your audience through probably surveys or something, but if you see that a lot of them might have kids or, you know, a certain hobby that they're interested in or something like that, then keeping it explicit might also be keeping people from listening in the first place, which is also something to think about every once in a while.
Right. But with my podcast, Polygamer, dealing with marginalized voices in online gaming, where there is a lot of harassment, I expect my audience to know that some of these topics might be difficult.
Exactly. That is one of the examples of that it's going to happen on your show because you're going to be discussing it.
Right. And I don't expect anybody to download my show and say, hey, kids, let's listen to this together.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. It's one of those follow your audience types of things.
Right.
So you've worked on a handful of shows. And how did you, I mean, we know how you started the first one, but how did you end up involved with all of these?
So let's see. The two I just mentioned, Polygamer and IndieCider, mm-hmm. those were created after I left the Open Apple podcast. Two things happened. One was I left the Open Apple podcast, which created some space for me to explore new opportunities, and I didn't know what to do with all this time. Mm-hmm. And the other was that I hosted a panel at the convention PAX East in Boston 2014, all about feminism in gaming. Mm-hmm. And that panel was, I've never been a public advocate for that topic prior to that event, and so I didn't expect to draw an audience. But the people I had on my panel, like Susan Arndt and Brianna Wu, they were well known, and the room was standing room only. There were like hundreds of people there, packed, and I realized that that was a conversation that had to continue beyond just these five panelists, these 500 listeners, this one room on this one day. It was a conversation that was much bigger than that. Mm-hmm. And so I launched Polygamer to continue that conversation. And then IndieCider, I am living in Boston, as I mentioned, and there is a very vibrant, very active indie game community here. If you wanted, you could go to some different indie game developer meetup pretty much every Monday night, whether you're women in games or you are interested in Unity. There's something going on every week. And I was seeing so much creativity here. I wanted to interview these people, and I'm like, I need to build a platform to make that happen.
Yes.
And so that's how IndieCider got launched. These are all podcasts that I created because these are people I want to talk to and personally learn from, and I need an excuse to do that.
That happens a lot. I've seen a lot of podcasters get their motivation from wanting to keep the conversation going and not knowing how, other than starting a podcast. I love it.
Yeah, and it's a great motivation because it means that you're personally fascinated by and invested in the topic. You're not doing this because you want to get $220 million in advertising.
Yes.
You know, you're doing it because you have some stake in the game and you want to share that passion with people. And your listeners can hear that. They can hear when you're passionate.
It stands out in every episode.
It really does.
You have spoken about podcasting and WordPress and about various types of creating content, and you even have done presentations on PowerPress before. So how did that happen?
It's true. So one of my part-time jobs is I am on the adjunct faculty at Emerson College in Boston, mm-hmm. which is a communication school, which is broadcast, journalism, print, acting, stand-up comedy, pretty much anything. I work in the publishing department, which is where I got my master's degree, and I teach both undergraduate and graduate courses in online publishing. It's an overview that covers a lot of different things, including how to make websites, ebooks, podcasts, crowdfunding, Google AdSense, a little bit of everything. My students' final project is to build a WordPress website, and one of their interstitial projects leading up to that is to interview somebody in the publishing industry, the electronic publishing industry. This was an assignment that I had when I took this class as a graduate student. And after conducting the interview, we were required to write papers about what we learned in the interview. Mm-hmm. I prefer my students to do work that will be seen by many people, not just the professor they're handing the paper into. These are publishing students. I want them to create portfolios. So I have them record the interview that they conduct and then edit it using Audacity. And then we publish it in PowerPress. And so that is another podcast I do called The Podcast, where I don't host it. I just publish it for my students on the class website. So every semester or season, we have 14 new episodes. Each week is a different host, a different student, and they're interviewing somebody else in the publishing industry.
That's a really interesting idea.
Yeah, it's a great project. It's a great way for my students to build their portfolio so that when they graduate from my class and they go for job interviews, they can say, here's a link to my work that you can find online. You can Google me and download my work from iTunes and listen to my show.
It makes so much sense. If they're going to be involved in publishing, they need to actually publish something.
Right, exactly. Yes. I have this presentation that I've prepared for my class. It's the podcasting unit. I show them how to record in Audacity, how RSS works to distribute a podcast. Mm-hmm. It's not too much about PowerPress because I leave that part of the assignment to me. They turn in the MP3 and then I publish it. But still, I figured maybe there's an audience for this. Yeah. I've been going to WordPress meetups in Boston almost every month for the last 7 years or so. Actually, 10 years. And it's just like the indie gaming community, just like the PowerPress community. It's very active and very passionate. And I've always wanted to speak at one. So this past February, I submitted a talk about podcasting with WordPress. It got accepted. They encouraged me to submit it to WordCamp Boston, which is occurring next month in July. Unfortunately, that event, WordCamp Boston, is the same week as the Apple II convention in Kansas City. And so I couldn't do both.
Right.
And so instead, I submitted the podcasting talk to WordCamp Portland, Maine, and they accepted it. And that's just a 2-hour drive north for me. So I went up there at the end of May and for the first time ever got to speak at WordCamp. And it was awesome.
That's exciting.
That was something I'd never done before. I mean, it got recorded and now you can find it on WordPress TV, which is something I can check off my bucket list.
Yes, definitely. That's actually the first time that I ever heard about you was, you know, we keep track of things involved with PowerPress, obviously. So it definitely came up on our radar and we watched it. We have a tendency to watch videos like this to see how accurate they are.
Oh, no. How'd I do?
You did good. You passed.
Oh, thank you.
You passed. But, you know, we do that, obviously, to see if this is something that we would be okay telling people to watch or promoting, or if it's just completely wrong or going against what we like to encourage for people. So that was actually the first time that I heard about you. And then you contacted me not too much later about the show. And I was, you know, happy to see that it was coming together like that. So that was good.
Yeah, I follow you on Twitter. And somebody had tweeted that if you would like to be a guest on the show, drop us an email. So off I went.
Yes. And you know, that that tweet that I sent out about being on the show, that still stands, people. That stands basically all the time. If you would like to be on the show, let me know.
Do you prefer to solicit guests or for guests to come to you?
A little bit of both, because there are pros and cons to each side there. Sometimes I like to go out and solicit them myself, because if so, that means I typically like their show and stumbled upon it somehow and think that they would be a good guest. And then sometimes when people ask me, obviously it's great that they want to be on the show and I enjoy that, but that doesn't mean that they have good intentions for me, meaning they just want to be on the show to promote whatever it is that they have and they don't actually fit. And then two, sometimes it's awkward when I look at their show and decide I don't like it and want to share it, and then I have to tell them no.
Yeah, I feel the same way. I would much rather ask somebody else and be turned down and be the one being rejected than have somebody else approach me and have me reject them.
Exactly. Yeah.
No, that's not to say that I don't want people approaching me. I would love to get some ideas about new guests, and there I'm sure are people who would be a perfect fit for Polygamer who I've never heard of.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. That's part of the reason why I like this is because, you know, if someone comes to me, then I obviously most likely haven't found them yet. So it's nice to see that someone cares enough in that sense and that they, you know, are at least reaching out. Mm-hmm. So
I have found that most of the guests I get on my show actually come from either Twitter or just as much from me attending conventions and seeing them be on panels and give talks and going up to them afterward and saying, hey, I really love what you said here. I'd love to go more in depth with you on my podcast. Would you be available?
Yes, actually, I didn't even think about that, but that's reminding me. Someone that I met at Podcast Movement last year emailed me yesterday, and she was saying that she wants to meet up again this year. And, you know, I met her last year at the convention, and then she was one of my guests. And while I was there last year, I signed up some other people as well to be on the show. So I hope to find some more people, meet some new people, and get that set up as well. Because if you're in person, you can obviously tell whether or not that you would most likely mesh on a show. Because sometimes there is that debate as well of, will we have a pleasant conversation or will this kind of go down a different path?
Right. You know, and it behooves you to do that homework. I once got solicited onto a podcast and I did some checking about who these people were. I'd never heard of them. And I wrote back and said, thank you for the invitation, but I don't think I'm a good fit for your show. And so they went ahead and did the show without me and they spent the first half hour bashing my show.
Well, that's just unfortunate, people. That is not the type of podcaster that I want to be associated with.
Right. I guess they couldn't handle the rejection, so they decided to turn around and attack me.
Yeah. That is not the situation that someone wants to be in, for sure.
No. I mean, I guess if I'd been on the show, I could have been there to defend myself, but I'd rather not be in that position either.
You know, I have huge doubts of how much they would have been bashing you if you had actually been on.
I'm not inclined to give them the benefit of the doubt.
Okay, then. I'm going to believe you.
But, you know, speaking of conventions, one great thing about hosting a podcast is that it gives you the credentials to submit panels to conventions and you can record a live episode of the show.
Yes, that is so cool. And a lot of the times people will have that opportunity to get together. You know, they'll be on opposite sides of the country, but they'll be here for this. And I've actually met people at conventions that I have known for so long or I've talked to and, you know, had these email chains with, and then it's actually nice to meet in person and then finally be able to sit down and have that podcast together instead of just doing it over Skype.
Right. Usually, or even sometimes when I'm going to a conference and I want to submit a panel, I'll email a dozen of my former guests and I'll say, hey, is anybody else going to this convention? Do you want to do a panel together?
Oh,
and if three or four people write back and say yes, I'm like, that's our panel.
That is a very good idea. You know, bring all those powerful minds together and make it work
and,
that way.
And since I'm only interviewing one person per episode, very often my guests don't know each other. So it's a great opportunity to introduce them.
Whole networking circle there, but in a positive way.
Right. You know, as opposed to exploitative.
Yes. Networking at a conference can be exhilarating and exhausting all at the same time.
It's true.
Some is good, some is bad.
Mostly good.
Yes, mostly good in the sense that, you know, you are okay with it. So
right.
There is that.
You know, speaking of interviews, I want to mention one other podcast I did.
Mm-hmm.
This podcast only lasted 4 months, and that was by design. It was supposed to be a weekly show leading up to a fundraising event. So it was promotional for that occasion.
Mm-hmm.
I do a lot of volunteer work with the National Multiple Sclerosis Society because my mom was diagnosed with MS 27 years ago. And I had been doing this fundraising event. It's 3 days long, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And over the course of the 3 days, you walk 50 miles across Cape Cod.
That sounds great.
It is.
A fundraiser and what you do for the fundraiser. That sounds great.
Yeah, thank you. It's a lot of fun. It's draining, both physically and emotionally. But you see all these people whose lives have been affected by MS, and yet they're still out there walking 50 miles and seemingly having a good time. And so I decided there must be some stories here. So over the course of those 4 months, every single week, I interviewed somebody whose life had been affected by MS, whether they had just been recently diagnosed or been diagnosed years ago, or they don't have MS and they're walking for a friend or parent or child, or they're the caretaker of somebody with MS. Mm-hmm. And there were just so many stories. Some of them I recorded over Skype. Others, I found a lot of people in the MS Society aren't very tech savvy. So I would go to their houses and interview them in person.
That was smart.
And it was a lot of fun. It was very powerful to hear these different stories. And people who are out there doing those 50 miles and who have such steely resolve, you find out where that comes from when you sit down with them one-on-one and hear their stories.
It sounds like a very rewarding podcast.
It was, and I was so glad to meet all those people. There was one person I interviewed who just last week, unfortunately, he passed away. Mm-hmm. He was the caretaker for his wife who had MS, and there has been such an outpouring of love and affection for him and all that he did for this community over the last decade, and I was able to contribute my podcast that to say, hey, you know, 5 years ago, I sat down and interviewed him for a half an hour, and by the end of the half an hour, he and I were both in tears.
Uh-huh.
And this is something that you can now listen to and remember him and everything else that he did for us.
Because otherwise that never would have existed.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's one reason why a lot of the podcasts I record, I publish them not only on my own website, but also on the Internet Archive, archive.org.
Mm, yeah.
You know, they're best known for the Wayback Machine, but they also collect a lot of other data. And I was able to create a repository or collection just for my show. So every single episode goes up there. So if I decide one day to rage quit my podcast and just delete the entire website,
mm-hmm.
or something worse happens, like I get hit by an 87 bus, then the podcast will live on.
Yes. Yes. That's been a topic of debate here once or twice. And it's, you know, what do you do with your show when you want to be done with it? And especially if you don't want to pay for hosting or anything like that anymore. And if you don't necessarily have anyone to handle your podcast, of what do you do with it? And that is a good solution.
Which actually brings up a question I have about PowerPress.
Mm-hmm.
I mentioned how I just recorded the last episode of IndieCider yesterday. And in PowerPress, I believe there's a checkbox to say, this podcast is concluded. There will be no more episodes. Is that right?
That is a question I don't know.
Okay. I thought I'd seen it in there, and I was wondering what the benefit to that is. Because let's say I go on a 3-year hiatus, and then I decide to do another episode. Does it behoove me to leave that box unchecked in the meantime?
I doubt that it would, because I assume that you can undo it in that sense. But I don't know. I need to get some details on that from the team and see what's going on, because I think that would be interesting and helpful for a lot of shows that they know they are done either for that season, possibly if they're into that format, or if they just, you know, are done with the show in general, like you said.
Okay, I just double checked to make sure I wasn't imagining things. Okay. It is specifically under the iTunes tab, and the option is called iTunes Complete. And the description says, indicates the completion of a podcast. iTunes will no longer update your listing in the iTunes podcast directory.
See that? Okay, that makes more sense in that iTunes will no longer pull your feed on a regular basis. It, like, what is in iTunes will be in iTunes. It's not going to, but if you put a new episode out, it's not going to pull it because it knows not to. That is what I would understand that to be.
So I can see the benefit to Apple in checking that box, in that it doesn't take any more of their resources to continuously check a feed that I'm not going to be updating.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering what the benefit to me is.
To you? I don't necessarily know one right off the bat. I would say maybe just that if you don't want anyone to touch this feed in that sense, if you don't want anyone to, you know, do anything with it, then that would be my guess. You bring up a very good point with this.
It's also a very minute one. Sorry to corner you like that.
No. This is perfect. This is things that I don't know that I want to know and that, you know, other people might be interested in. So that's perfect.
Great.
You bring up a good point that I will have to weasel out of the team to see what's going on.
I look forward to hearing what they have to say.
Yes. Yes, I will update all of you on the next episode of what this actually means.
Great. I'll be listening.
Good. So I just got one last question here.
Yes.
You wear a lot of hats with your podcast and with the work that you've done and starting out with this. And throughout all of that, what is your favorite part of everything that you're involved in?
My favorite part of podcasting?
See, that could be, it could be, what is your favorite part of podcasting or something else? That is up to you.
Let's see. I would say my least favorite part is probably the editing.
I understand that.
I mean, I don't do live to tape. I listen to everything I record and I clean it up to make everybody sound smart. And that puts my guests much at ease.
Yeah.
Although it's as much for my benefit as it is for theirs. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I would just say getting to meet people and to know people and the honor of them sharing their time and their insights with me, especially when talking about Polygamer and interviewing marginalized voices in the gaming community, online, on Twitter. I'm a straight, white, cisgendered dude. Mm-hmm. And those, I mean, I'm trying not to apply stereotypes, but usually if you look at the demographics of who is being attacked online, it's not usually people like me.
Yeah.
You know, I'm pretty safe as far as it goes. I can say stuff on Twitter and not worry about people calling up my boss or my former employers or my parents in the middle of the night and that harassment going from offline to online or vice versa. The fact that people nonetheless trust me to share their stories, to signal boost them on my podcast, no matter who or what, where or what they've done. I mean, right here in Boston, we had an indie game developer named Zoe Quinn, who was the subject of significant harassment. And even though she and I have never met, even though we lived in the same town, she still came on my podcast. And I told her before we started recording, mm-hmm. I said, if anything comes up that you don't want to talk about, if I say something that makes you uncomfortable or there's just a direction you don't want to go, just let me know and either I'll pivot at that moment or I'll edit it out after we record, before we air it.
Mm-hmm.
And she really appreciated that. I could hear it in her voice. She's like, wow, thank you. I don't think that's what women online expect, unfortunately.
I mean, even not even involved in the gaming industry. You don't. You don't expect that as a woman.
Yeah. So the fact that people give me the benefit of the doubt and will talk to me is an honor and a privilege.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So that's what I would say is what I appreciate.
You know, it actually kind of made me smile there for a second because you said the thing you dislike the most is editing. And if I remember correctly, you said that's how you started getting involved
exactly.
in podcasting. Yes.
Well, the podcast I used to edit for Computer World, it was just the weekly editorial that our editor-in-chief would write. It'd be on page 2 of the magazine. Mm-hmm. And he would sit down in front of a microphone and just read it out loud. So it was just a 5-minute podcast, and I just have to clean it up and publish it. And it was easy. It was one voice. It was 5 minutes. That I can handle. But
when
you're dealing with an hour of content and multiple voices, ugh.
I know. It can be a hassle. It can be overwhelming at times.
I tell new podcasters when they're just getting started, however long your podcast is, budget 4 times that length to edit it.
Mm-hmm.
I've gotten it down to about twice as long as the podcast, partly because I've just gotten better at it. Another reason is because when I'm editing, I'm playing the audio back at 150% speed.
Oh, that's good.
So not only is it faster, but nobody likes listening to their own voices, but in Audacity, when I play it back at 1.5, it doesn't sound like me. It sounds like a chipmunk.
You're able to forget who you're talking, like who's, you know, on there.
Right. There's some cognitive dissonance where I can say, oh, that's not me.
Yes, I understand that. Thank you so much for telling us all about how you've been involved in not only podcasting, but with PowerPress, and for talking with me about podcasting revenues. And it was great to have you on, and thanks for being part of the Blueberry community in that sense. We really appreciate it.
My pleasure. And again, thank you for enabling every podcast I've ever done. I don't know that I'd be here without you.
Good. So everyone, thanks for listening, and we'll see you next episode.
Great.
This is Sean Thorpe from the Blueberry support team with this week's PowerPress tip. And before I continue, just a short programming note to say that I am recording this during the day, which means there may be any number of cars, trains, planes, birds, and air conditioners heard in the background, so my apologies there, but there's really not much that can be done about it. A question that comes in pretty often is, why is my iTunes store listing only showing whatever the number may be, usually 10 episodes? With a follow-up question along the lines of, I want to show all of my episodes, how do I do it? And an iTunes store listing, like most podcast syndication points, relies on the information that's in your podcast RSS feed to determine what to display. By default, WordPress, and by extension PowerPress, set your RSS feeds to display only the 10 most recent items. So in the case of the iTunes store, once you publish 11 episodes, your first episode will drop out of the RSS feed, and in turn, it will no longer be displayed in places like the iTunes store. If you'd like to display more than the default number of episodes, there are a couple of settings you'll need to change. The first one is actually a core WordPress setting, so it's not specifically in the PowerPress settings, though there is a PowerPress setting we will look at a little bit later. So what you want to do is log into your WordPress site and hover over the settings link that is in the left-hand sidebar of your WordPress dashboard. That'll create a pop-up menu, and you'll want to click the reading link inside that menu. On the next page, you want to increase the number that is within the syndication feeds show the most recent field, and you can set that theoretically to whatever you'd like. You should see it currently set to 10. Keep in mind that the iTunes store has a limit of about 300 episodes, so you probably won't want to set it higher than that. I generally recommend most people, when they're first starting out, to set it to maybe around 50 or 100. Once you've entered the desired number, just click the Save Changes button at the bottom of the page. Now getting back to PowerPress, you'll want to hover over the PowerPress link in the sidebar of your WordPress dashboard and click the settings link in the pop-up menu there. Then you'll want to make sure that you are in advanced mode, and you'll want to click the feeds tab. And again, you're going to change the number in a field that is very similarly named to the one that you've already changed. In the PowerPress feeds tab, it is called show the most recent, and you'll want to enter the same number into that field as you entered into the previous step in the WordPress reading settings, and again, click the Save Changes button at the bottom of the page. Now your podcast RSS feed will display the total number of items that you've entered into these two places. Just to clarify, you can set that number higher than the number of episodes you've actually published so far, so you don't need to keep going back and upping that number every time you publish a new episode. If you've published 11 episodes and you're noticing that your feed is only holding the last 10, you can set the number to 50 and all of your episodes up to the first 50 will be shown in the feed. So once you've published episode 51, the oldest episode in your feed will then drop off and it will no longer be seen in places like the iTunes store. But it will, however, remain on your website. I need to provide a word of caution here about RSS feed size. Setting the number of episodes to a very high number may drastically increase the file size of your RSS feed, which could cause performance issues in some cases. If your show notes are usually very short, this probably won't be an issue. But if you have very detailed show notes that contain a lot of information, you may want to keep the number to something more manageable, say between 50 and 100 episodes. There are also some features within PowerPress that you can use to help keep your podcast RSS feed size down, and we will go over some of those in the next PowerPress Tips segment. For now, this has been Sean Thorpe from the Blueberry Support Team. Thank you for listening. I will be back in the future with more PowerPress Tips.